Your name and that of your sister would figure largely. On the other hand, should Watson here go to the country police when it's light and inform them truly that the doctor has merely suffered from an accident, I have no doubt at all I could put you onto the train to your aunt tomorrow morning without you ever being bothered again regarding this matter. I stress that while this is not perhaps an ideal solution, it is possibly an acceptable one.
Mr. Holmes, may I your arm? I would go closer if I might. Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, my view is that justice has been done. Now, please, help me back to my room.
A classic case, then, Doctor, of my reasoning from insufficient data and thereby coming to an entirely erroneous conclusion. The presence of the gypsies and the dead sister's use of the word band putting me entirely on the wrong scent. I can, however, claim the merit that I instantly reconsidered my position when it became clear that the danger could not have come from the window or the door, but must have been the work of an inside agency. Then, of course, came the discovery of the false bell pull. This hanging alongside the ventilator gave me the idea it was simply there as a bridge for something to pass through the ventilator and down to the bed. The notion of a snake came immediately, and as the doctor was furnished with a supply of creatures from India...
A wild coroner, of course.
Yeah, not a hope, Watson. A form of poison that could not be discovered by chemical test. Why, it would be a sharp-eyed coroner indeed who could distinguish the small punctures where the two fangs have done their work. Then there was the whistle. Of course, he must recall it before morning light and have trained it to return by use of the saucer of milk.
Kept near the safe, which in turn gave rise to the clang as the snake was locked in it during the day. But how would he know it would bite?
He did not. Not on any given occasion. He would simply slip the snake through the ventilator at the hour he thought best, with the certainty it would crawl down the rope and land on the bed. Then, sooner or later, even if it took a week...
How truly horrible.
Indeed. Indeed. I had more or less come to these conclusions before I entered the doctor's room, the safe and the loop of whipcord merely adding to my conviction. What finally convinced me beyond all reasonable doubt, however, was the chair.
The chair?
You recall how closely I examined it with my glass.
Ah, yes.
What it told Watson was that Dr. Roylott was in the habit of standing on it. Usually an unnecessary pastime, unless one wants to put something through a hole above one's head.
I Jove.
And it was simply a matter of baiting our trap and waiting for the strike. When it came in the shape of a hiss, I instantly lit the match and attacked the creature, arousing its snakish temper and driving it back through the ventilator where it flew at the first person it saw.
Indeed.
Which means, as you have gathered, that I am indirectly responsible for the death of Dr. Grimesby Roylott of Stoke Moran.
My dear fellow,
although I cannot say it is likely to weigh very heavily on my conscience. Cigar?
In The Speckled Band, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. Helen Stoner was played by Susan Wooldridge, with Jane Whittenshaw as Julia Stoner and Ian Lindsay as Dr. Grimesby Roylott. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Speckled Band was dramatized for radio by Vincent McInerney and directed by Patrick Rayner.